Today, is the global synchronous recovery a mirage? Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I want to talk about an important post from Zero Hedge. I will include the link below, talking about the apparent effort to talk up the so-called global recovery. Things may not be what they seem, and if true, then our scenario 4 comes a little closer with all the ramifications which we've already discussed. To start then, just over a month ago, in what seemed to be an effort to keep the dream of a global synchronous recovery narrative alive, Morgan Stanley attempted to show that the link between China's declining credit impulse and the global economy, which we are constantly being told is ebullient, has now been severed and that all is well in the world. Their chief Asia economist began by confirming that if you had been able to reliably pick the key global macro variable over 2012-16, China's credit impulse would have been your choice because of the incredibly tight link between the credit impulse and China's growth cycle, emerging markets, exports, global growth, and commodity prices meant that it would have accurately predicted the direction of almost all other global macro variables that mattered, with about a 6 months lead time. China's credit impulse, or its leverage cycle, was the only game in town back then. With global aggregate demand weak as developed markets were deleveraging and emerging markets were adjusting, the change in China's credit impulse was the most significant driver of the global economy. However, in a striking claim that breaks with precedent and which, if correct, suggests a historic change in the relationship between China's credit creation and its impact on global markets and economies, the Morgan Stanley economist then writes that the link between China's credit impulse and the global economy has now been broken, and justifies his answer as follows. China's tightening has not had a material impact on the growth cycle either in China or globally, even though its credit impulse began to weaken about 24 months ago. As deleveraging and adjustment headwinds recede, the recoveries in domestic demand in both developed markets and emerging markets have emerged as additional global growth engines. However, Goldman Sachs disagrees, warning that things are about to get a lot more problematic for that global synchronous recovery narrative as China's collapsing credit impulse wriggles its way through the economy. Since 2008, there have been 2.5 distinct cycles in China credit. They are clear to see if you plot net credit flows from lenders to borrowers against nominal IP growth in China. Lower net credit flows from lenders to borrowers weigh on future activity growth. And we can see how peaks and troughs in net credit flows from lenders to borrowers tend to systematically predict growth, outperformance, underperformance over a short period of time. But then growth, underperformance or overperformance over a longer horizon. For example, the peak in net credit flows from lenders to borrowers in late 2009, early 2013, and mid-2016 were systematically followed by peaks in nominal activity 2 to 3 quarters after, and then, in the case of peaks in 2009 and 2013, a trough in nominal activity growth 2.5 to 3 years after. In our empirical estimations, we attempt to measure this predictable lag between peaks in net credit flow from lenders to borrowers and nominal activity growth. Credit boost to China activity peaked in mid-2017 and has declined since. With the result of our modelling exercise in hand, we can simulate the net impact of changes in the net credit flow on past and future activity growth. armed with the stylized impact of shocks to credit flow on activity growth, we can sum up the effects from the historical path of changes in the net credit flow to generate an aggregate growth impact of net credit flow for every period. The conclusion is that net credit impulse or activity growth is likely to slow over the coming year. This suggests that net credit flows were a substantial drag on growth in late 2014 and 2015 as new borrowings deaccelerated and debt service costs rose. Therefore, as net credit flows rose in mid-2015 as net borrowings accelerated and debt servicing costs fell, this provided a meaningful boost to activity growth. The positive credit impulse on nominal activity peaked in mid-2017, about a year after the peak in net credit flows, and has declined since. And results for real activity growth are very similar. The credit impulse should continue to push activity growth modestly weaker in our base case of a stabilization in new borrowings at current levels. What can we expect for activity growth going forward? Well, the pre-specified path of debt service already bakes some impacts in the cake. We evaluate some scenarios on the future path of new borrowings in the economy to estimate the net activity impact going forward. In our base case, where new borrowings stabilize at current levels, net credit flows would gradually decline as debt service costs rise, dragging nominal growth lower by around 70 basis points from plus 30 basis points above trend to down minus 40 basis points below trend, and real growth lower by 20 basis points from plus 5 basis points above trend to minus 15 basis points below trend over the next 12 months. In practice, this scenario is in line with our expectation on the policy stance, i.e. that the government will continue to tighten policies in targeted areas, such as on shadow banking products, local government irregular borrowings, etc., while keeping the broad monetary policy accommodative and lowering interest rates to offset some of the targeted tightening effect. The growth impacts in our base case are broadly in line with our current forecast of modestly slower nominal and real GDP growth over the next year, with more negative impacts on activity should new borrowings continue to accelerate at the same rate as since 2016. In a bearish case, new borrowings continue to deaccelerate at the same pace that they have done since mid-2016, and net credit flows decline more sharply than in our base case. In practice, this case could emerge if the government over-tightens on shadow banking products or local government's irregular borrowings and does not sufficiently substitute these borrowings with other standard credit. In this base case, we would expect the drag on nominal growth to increase to 140 basis points and real growth to 40 basis points over the next 12 months. Even in a more optimistic case, in which new borrowings gradually increase to offset rising debt servicing costs over the next year, stabilizing net credit flows at current levels versus GDP, real and nominal activity growth should deaccelerate, although more modestly than our base case. The key takeaway from this exercise is that barring meaningful increases in new borrowings over the next year, activity growth in China is likely to deaccelerate as the credit impulse to activity growth fades and debt servicing costs rise. Therefore, the global economy is looking weaker. If you like what you've heard here today, please like the post and add a comment or a question. If you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.